This is Gene Steinecker and I'm Phil Hudock. We're in Charleston. It's February 24th and we are going to serve some legislators with a petition of redress of grievance. I'm going to ask the Lord to bless us, to use us for His glory, to open hearts and minds, and may we be a testimony to Jesus, our Creator, and bring this world, bring this country at least, back to the constitutional, Christian Constitutional Republic that formed it and made it great. And we thank you, Lord, and we give you the praise in Jesus' name. Amen.
Well, in 33, they actually said, in writing, in congressional testimony, that we are the enemy.
There was a Treating with the Enemy Act in 1917, okay? And then in 1933, remember when they confiscated the gold? Roosevelt actually had Congress pass an act giving him dictatorial powers as long as we were in a state of emergency and suspended the Constitution.
War Powers Act, and Roosevelt got permission from Congress to suspend the Constitution, to have everyone turn in their gold, which, you know, something had to happen in order for the government just to say, you've got something, give it to me. You know.
And it's actually suspended to this day because the president has never rescinded the declaration of emergency.
Well, the federal government says they aren't in effect. You only have privileges now. You don't have the right to travel.
So that's when licenses started, because now they made things privileges because you didn't have these common law rights, you see?
So we got a war on drugs, a war on poverty. So they're not lying when they say we have all these wars. What they don't tell you is that we are considered enemies.
Well, West Virginia's rights of its citizens are being violated.
And Congress doesn't seem to really be stopping him, you know, impeaching him maybe for violating the Constitution.
We see the president doing things that he shouldn't be able to do. And why isn't Congress stopping him? Because they actually know that he is above the law. He can't legally do it.
Really?
He can legally do it. See, here's where West Virginia comes in. Our Constitution states that it is valid during wartime and peace.
In wartime and in peace.
Well, the federal government said, no, you've lost your rights because we're in a period of war.
But we will grant you rights by license, which is permission to do that, which is otherwise illegal, according to Black's Law Dictionary. So this document will just blow your mind.
This is by Melvin Stanford. He's a college professor of law. I mean, this document is by a law professor, and it's absolutely just for not... Well, when you read it there, you're going to get mad.
And we have created a First Amendment petition for redress of grievances, and these are acceptances of oath of office. When you take an oath, it's like a contract. And so,
in other words, you know, you took an oath of office.
That's an affirmation that we accept your contract.
And that's a contract. And basically, we want to just bring this to the public that, you know, something's wrong with this picture.
Something has to be done because my children, my grandchildren, I don't know if you have children.
No, I don't have any children, but I have relatives, younger
ones. Yes. Well, you know, they really don't have a future if we don't have the rule of law.
Can I keep these?
Yes, that's for you.
Okay, well, thank you.
I know it's bizarre, and like I say, you know, you're our representative. We come to you, and we say, here's the situation. Don't take my word for it. It's in writing.
I'll be glad to look at this.
Yeah, well, I really do appreciate that, sir. Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Are you giving this to me, or is it just me?
That's for you, and it gets highlighted, what we think is important.
So I will read this.
I wasn't aware of it.
And most people aren't. They're shocked. Very few people know. You know, check it out. Don't take my word for it. Check it out.
Okay.
Right, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Roosevelt did this.
Roosevelt did it, yeah.
West Virginia Constitution, Article 1, Section 3. Continuity of Constitutional Operation. The provisions of the Constitution of the United States and of this state are operative alike in a period of war as in time of peace, and any departure therefrom or violation thereof under the plea of necessity or any other plea, is subversive of good government and tends to anarchy and despotism. Here we go. An Adventure in Education in Contract Law, Arbitration, and Legislative Private Side Bills. Treaty of Peace 2020, a ticket to free will. It's your choice. The first thing I want to address is Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. It states, "The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority." So Article 3, Section 2, petitioning your government for redress of grievances is the means to solve a problem. If you have a problem with the government, that's the normal route that you're supposed to take. I've broken down this presentation into two segments. You'll see that Article 3, Section 2 is highlighted in yellow, involves four steps. And in red is necessity and emergency attempts of relief. This is what you have to do when Article 3, Section 2 fails to deliver that relief. So you'll see that we first went to the West Virginia legislature with a bill for redress of grievances. And we also approached the West Virginia legislature as a court with a writ of error. So writ of error for West Virginia legislature is addressing the legislature as a court. You have to understand that the legislature is actually the highest court in the land. As a matter of fact, the West Virginia legislature impeached all five justices of the West Virginia Supreme Court, and then there were trials held in the West Virginia Senate. So they were acting as a court, and that goes back to Blackstone and the beginnings of this country. You have to understand that our law form is really the British law form minus the king. Take the king out of the equation, and you basically have our law form, which was inherited from Britain. When those two ways of exercising Article 3, Section 2 were not answered, we went to the West Virginia Supreme Court with a writ and the Attorney General and Wood County. Under necessity, we asked for relief. We didn't get it. Therefore, we had to move up the food chain. So we did an Article 3, Section 2 petition for redress of grievances to the U.S. Senate. And we approached the U.S. legislature as a court using, again, Article 3, Section 2. And the legislature is, again, the highest court in the land. When that failed, we went to the U.S. Supreme Court under necessity and emergency because Article 3, Section 2, we weren't able to get relief. As a matter of fact, they didn't even answer. How can you get relief when at all these levels there is no answer? They just ignore you. Then we went to the Supreme Court with an emergency attempt at relief. We did not receive an answer from the Supreme Court. The only thing that was left was, out of necessity and emergency, go to the Judge Advocate General of the military. The second segment of this presentation involves what I call the final steps to arbitration. The first thing is a proof of claim of 573 points. We simply said, okay, if the Constitution is valid, show us your constitutional authority for these 573 points. At this point in the proof of claim, we also established our standing as heirs of the Creator. Very important. We claimed the birthright, our true birthright. When they didn't answer, that meant the Constitution was void. Next, we gave them an opportunity to cure. We said, the Constitution is void. We want a new contract under a new law form. And we established arbitration as the means to solve this problem. No answer meant that the government, all three branches, both with the proof of claim and the opportunity to cure, no answer meant that they agreed to our new contract under a new law form with arbitration established. When they didn't answer this, we offered a dispute negotiation. We offered to settle. You're not going to deal with us. You have to solve this problem. When they didn't answer in the third and final step, dispute negotiation, the only thing left was arbitration to solve the problem using a neutral third party. Going back to the first phase, we're going to look at the actual documents and see important parts of those documents so that you understand why this applies to you and how it was done in a proper fashion. First thing, bill for redress of grievances, West Virginia Legislature. You'll notice in the upper left-hand corner, this applies to all men and women. This was done on behalf of all people. You also notice in the on the right-hand side in the box that this is a Article 3, Section 2, move for redress of grievances. Next came addressing the legislature in West Virginia as the highest court in the land. Again, upper left-hand corner, applies to everyone. We quoted Blackstone commentaries, which is the best statement of our law form when our country and Constitution were established. Okay, maxims of law. Let me explain a maxim of law concerning necessity. Several maxims, actually. Maxims of law are truisms, time-tested principles upon which law is founded. The word necessity, the situation where necessity arises. Here are four maxims of law that show what necessity means. That which is not otherwise lawful, necessity makes lawful. Necessity makes a privilege which supersedes law. Necessity overcomes the law. It breaks the chains of justice. Every law has either been created by consent or established by necessity or confirmed by custom. What necessity compels, it justifies. Understand, arbitration is a means of necessity. A necessity when two opposing people or groups have a problem and they can't work it out. By necessity, you go to arbitration. This was the third step in West Virginia, and you'll notice at the bottom in the box, kind of in the middle, by, under, and through the absolute authority of necessity and emergency. In other words, when we went to the legislature as a bill-making organization and the highest court, and they didn't answer us, then out of necessity, we went to the West Virginia Supreme Court. Guess what? We got no relief there. So then we went up the food chain. What do you do when in the state of West Virginia, you can get no relief? Well, you move up the food chain to the federal government. So here you see a bill for petition and redress of grievances to the U.S. Senate. Again, this is using Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. This is what you're supposed to do. We also approach the West Virginia, or the United States legislature, as a court, as the highest court, which they are, with writs for relief. No answer. So back to the maxims of law, what do you have to do? You have to establish a privilege, and the privilege is called arbitration. We had the privilege to go to a third-party neutral arbitrator to determine who was right in this situation. So we're now in necessity. The United States legislature, both as a legislative body for producing bills and as a highest court, didn't answer. So we went to the U.S. Supreme Court under necessity with writs for relief. And again, you'll notice in all these documents, in the upper left-hand corner, this applies to all men and women. When that failed, even the United States Supreme Court would not communicate with us. We went to the highest possible level we could go. Out of extraordinary necessity, we went to the Judge Advocate General of the United States American Army. These are the steps toward arbitration now. This is the second segment that I've broken this down into. We went all the way through the system. We established that we were heirs of the King of Kings, heirs of the Creator, that we were claiming our birthright, that we were under a new law form, the law form of our Creator, and that arbitration was a means to solve this problem. We presented a proof of claim to all three branches of the government. In it were 573 points. We said, okay, you say the Constitution is your contract with us. Show us how you can do these 573 things where you have the authority to do them. This is, again, where we established with the United States government our standing as heirs of the Creator and that the Constitution was indeed void. Okay, now we're going to look at the final steps toward arbitration. Proof of claim. Here's a section of the proof of claim. Again, upper left-hand corner. This applies to all men and women. It is a demand for all proofs of claim. You see the first three proofs of claim. Remember, there are 573 presented to all three branches of the United States government. On page 44 of this proof of claim, you'll notice the contract number is presented. J316FGSLTWTHGHOBS, which is actually John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. This was simply an identifier of this document. This proof of claim is taken to the federal government out of absolute necessity. We are heirs of the Creator, you see here, an heir of the Almighty Creator, and as such, I, Philip Hudock, as heir, am entitled to my legal, lawful, equitable, spiritual, and any and all other right, interest, title, and share of creation. An heir of the Creator, a different law form. And I signed it. This is where I took on the standing officially as heir of the Creator. This had to be done in order to effectuate this arbitration. On page 46 of the proof of claim, this is a notice and declaration of cancellation and revocation under and out of the authority of absolute necessity. So because of absolute necessity for fraud, non-disclosure of pertinent facts, lack of authority of the other signatory party, and no meeting of the minds. And I'll skip down here. Documents, papers, agreements, contracts, tangible mediums between me and the former United States of America and State of West Virginia are hereby canceled, extinguished, voided, and discharged. I rescinded, revoked, cancel, and voided my contract with the federal government. And I signed that. So I have a standing as heir of the Creator and acknowledge the canceling of the contract because of their actions. This is also in the proof of claim. Notice it states the respondents failed to provide the requested, required, and necessary proofs of claim under the contract which was established. The respondents are bound to the explicit terms of the contract. The important thing here is that in this proof of claim, which the government did not respond to, a statement is made that the contract, and I just told you, John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, and the procedure, process for remedy under this contract is exclusively via arbitration neutral party. There is now, in this proof of claim, which they did not answer, a contract between us and them where arbitration is the exclusive remedy to solve this problem. This establishes arbitration in the proof of claim. When the government doesn't answer, they admit to it. This is the second document leading up to arbitration. It's titled Offer for Dispute Resolution Negotiations. Again, done on behalf of all people. Referring to the contract, you'll see the remedy that was sought. So after the proof of claim was unanswered, then there was an offer dispute resolution. I'll just read the first one. This is a remedy to make the undersigned and beneficiaries whole, make them whole, to give them remedy for what happened. And the first thing is an opt-in process for beneficiaries designed to be simple and rapid. Again, this is for all men and women, and the opt-in process is stated in the first statement of general remedy. Concerning arbitration, I want to talk about arbitration. A lot of people are unfamiliar with arbitration. This is from the Cleveland State Law Review of the Cleveland State University. Okay, now looking at the history of arbitration, because a lot of people are not familiar with arbitration. Its history goes way back. You'll see here from the Cleveland State Law Review of the Cleveland State University. If you look in the Bible, Solomon was an arbitrator, similar to that used by arbitrators today. In 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 16 to 28, it talks about two women that came to the king. They both claimed that a child was theirs. They decided to take their dispute to the king, and he was going to decide who should have the child. Arbitration was practiced in biblical times. Here's another history of arbitration practice in law, going back to 600 BC in Athens, 480 BC in Corinth, 117 BC. It goes back really to prehistory, when two people went to a third person and said, "We can't solve this. Help us out." In America, the history of arbitration, this is from the University of Missouri School of Law Scholarship Repository under Journal of Dispute Resolution. The Federal Arbitration Act was passed. It was enacted in 1925. In this article, they show that William Blackstone included a sophisticated and fairly detailed description of arbitration in his Commentaries of the Laws of England, 1765 to 1769. Blackstone was describing a dispute resolution practice that had flourished in England for centuries. In Blackstone's Commentaries on page 14, volume 2, arbitration. This decision in any of these cases is called an award. So when you have arbitration, the decision is called an award. And according to Blackstone, "and thereby the question is as fully determined and the right transferred or settled as it could have been by the agreement of the parties or the judgment of a court of justice." So therefore, the decision carries the same weight as a judgment by the courts, which is what we tried to get. Again, you have to go to arbitration when you can't get relief in the courts. This shows that in 2018, in the Supreme Court of the United States, there was argued and decided a case concerning arbitration. In that opinion written by Justice Kavanaugh, it was held that, quote, "The wholly groundless exception to arbitration is inconsistent with the Federal Arbitration Act and this court's precedent. Under the Act, arbitration is a matter of contract, and courts must enforce arbitration contracts according to their terms. Remember, we established the contract in the proof of claim that arbitration was to be the means of settling this dispute. The contract had been made." It goes on to say, "Therefore, when the parties contract delegates the arbitrability question to an arbitrator, a court may not override the contract, even if the court thinks that the arbitrability claim is wholly groundless." You must understand that when an arbitration is rendered because of a contract for arbitration, which we established, whatever the arbitrator says cannot be overridden by any court. Who decides that threshold arbitrability question? Under the Act, this is the Act of 1925, and this court's cases, the question of who decides the arbitrability is itself a question of contract. The Act allows parties to agree by contract that an arbitrator, rather than a court, will resolve threshold arbitrability questions as well as underlying merits disputes. So therefore, again, The contract determines if arbitration is necessary. And we had the contract simply because we stated it, we offered it, they failed to acknowledge. We must interpret the act as written, and the act in turn requires that we interpret the contract as written. When the party's contract delegates the arbitrability question to an arbitrator, a court may not override the contract. In those circumstances, a court possesses no power to decide the arbitrability issue. That is true even if the court thinks that the argument that the arbitration agreement applies to a particular dispute is wholly groundless. That conclusion follows not only from the text of the Act, but also from precedent. We have held that a court may not, quote, rule on the potential merits of the underlying, end quote, claim that is assigned by contract to an arbitrator, even if it appears to the court to be frivolous. That's why this arbitration award is so important. It cannot be overridden. It is final. Interestingly, this next slide shows, some people will say, you know, arbitration is not in force. Well, if that's the case, why was there a bill entered into the 116th Congress this past year, H.R. 1423, cited as, quote, Forced Arbitration Injustice Repeal Act? This is a bill to have an act to repeal forced arbitration. The FAIR Act. Now, if you think it's fair to get rid of arbitration, which means that if the government doesn't want to deal in good faith and doesn't answer you, and there is no other method of redress of grievances, if you think that's fair, we're not on the same page. So the purpose, to prohibit dispute arbitration agreements that force arbitration of future, guess what, civil rights disputes. This bill, H.R. 1423, hasn't gone anywhere. It was introduced into Congress by none other than Hank Johnson, the Guam Island tipping guy. If you don't understand that, go to YouTube. All right, next slide. A lot of people don't understand private law. Remember, we went to the West Virginia legislature for a bill, and we went to the U.S. legislature for a bill. Legislatures can write bills two different ways. A public bill, okay, it's a bill for a public law, or a bill for a private law. In other words, when the bill is passed, it becomes law. Here you see 1838. Notice that the first five laws, which they call chapters, are public. You can see a description. The next two, four, the next six were private laws. Notice there is no description. Why? Because these were laws passed on the private side for the Congress to settle a problem between the government and the people. These are private laws. They applied to a specific situation where these people had a problem with the government, and the government was going to address the problem with a private law. Continuing, 1838, look at all the private laws. As a matter of fact, if you look at the entire Congress of 1838, all their bills, you'll find that there were more laws on the private side to amend problems between the government and the people. This is important because this is what Treaty of Peace 2020 is going to do. Take this arbitration award to Congress for a private law for remedy redress of grievances, for a redress of the grievances. This slide, Private Law 114-31, issued December 3rd, 2016, from the Government Printing Office, is a private law from 3 years ago of a settlement agreement that was passed by Congress for relief, and it says relief of Bradley Christopher Stark, Sean Michael Rideout, and certain named beneficiaries. This is a case where a person who had a problem presented a bill to Congress. Congress agreed. Congress passed an act to make a settlement agreement with these people. Not all these people were in the original complaint to the government. There were opt-ins. There were over 24 opt-ins, just as we are having opt-ins into our arbitration award. These people, through arbitration, had an award. They took it to Congress. Congress passed an act to settle. So, basically, it's free will choice. What's your choice? Please go to hudoc.info. Note that the opt-in deadline now is December 25th, 2019.